So, think about the steering wheel in your car for a second. You turn it left, and well, the car goes left. You hit the brakes, the car stops. There's this very direct physical connection between your intention and the machine's action.
Right.
You are totally in control.
Right. Yeah. A one-to-one relationship.
Exactly. But when I look at the technology in my pocket or, sitting on my desk right now, that steering wheel feels incredibly disconnected. It's like someone else has their hands on the wheel and they're gently nudging me into their lane and they're charging me a toll while they do it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So today we are taking a deep dive into a huge stack of sources from the May 26th, 2026 edition of the Tikkun Morning Newsletter. And the mission for this deep dive is pretty clear. We're unpacking what feels like a massive inflection point regarding power, control, and most importantly, pushback in the tech world.
Yeah, the pushback is the really fascinating part.
Right. Because you've got these giants, Apple, Microsoft, the biggest AI developers on the planet, and suddenly they're facing this unprecedented resistance from like grassroots voters, the US government, and believe it or not, even the Vatican.
Which is wild. And while those players sound just wildly disparate on the surface, connecting them actually reveals one massive overlapping story. It's really all about who actually gets to dictate our technological future.
Yeah.
We are essentially watching this real-time tug of war. You've got corporations trying to maintain lock-in on one side, and then consumers, regulators, and institutions just trying to yank that control back.
So let's start that tug of war at probably the most direct point of contact for you and me, our wallets. Hardware companies are experimenting with vastly different ways to maintain control over consumer spending right now.
Very different approaches.
And on one side, we have Sennheiser, who's actually actively yielding control back to the user, which is rare. They are launching the Momentum 5 wireless headphones on June 16th, 2026.
Right, for $399.
Yeah, $399. But the headline feature isn't some, I don't know, fancy new spatial audio codec or whatever.
Sure.
It's a user-replaceable 700 milliamp hour battery. And you can swap it out in literally 5 minutes with just a standard Phillips head screwdriver.
I mean, breaking the industry norm of planned obsolescence like that is a massive structural shift.
Oh, totally.
Because to really get why this is a big deal, we have to look at the underlying physics of lithium-ion batteries. It explains why the industry relies on gluing these devices shut in the first place.
Right. It's not just corporate greed, it's chemistry.
Exactly. It comes down to basic chemistry. After about 500 to 800 charge cycles, which is roughly, say, 2 to 3 years of daily use, a battery's capacity just naturally degrades to about 70 or 80% of its original state.
So your 50-hour battery life drops to 30 hours, and
So you're
then,
charging it constantly.
yeah. And eventually the headphones are just dead weight on a long flight. And the industry standard response to that chemical reality has always been to just force you back to the checkout counter for another $400 pair.
Right. And if you run the numbers, over a 9-year period, replacing premium headphones every 3 years, that costs a consumer $1,200.
Which is painful.
Very painful. But Sennheiser is completely flipping that economic model on its head. By providing a $25 replacement battery, that 9-year cost calculation changes drastically.
You do the math for us because it's a huge drop.
Well, you pay the initial $399, right? Plus two $25 batteries over the decade. So the total cost of ownership drops from $1,200 to just $499.
Wow.
Yeah, that is a $701 savings. They are effectively handing long-term financial control back to the buyer.
But they're losing out on all those future hardware sales.
They are gambling that extreme brand loyalty is going to offset the loss of cyclical hardware upgrades.
That's a fascinating strategy. So that's a company winning loyalty through longevity.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other end of the spectrum, we have Nintendo. And they are maintaining control of the consumer's wallet through sheer psychological urgency.
Oh, it's a master class in behavioral economics.
It really is. So they just dropped a Choose Your Game bundle for the Switch 2. It's sitting at major retailers right now for $499.99.
Yep.
And with that, you get the console plus a digital download code for one of three powerhouse games. You can pick Mario Kart World, which normally goes for $80.
Which is pricey for a game.
Yeah.
Fair.
Or you can pick Donkey Kong Bonanza for $70, or Pokemon Pokopia, which is also $70.
And those game choices, they are highly calculated.
How so?
Well, Mario Kart is a social game, right? It drives massive accessory sales. Historical data shows that players buy an average of 2.3 extra controllers within 6 months of getting it.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Because you have friends over and everyone needs a controller.
Exactly. Then you have Donkey Kong, which captures the loyal, nostalgic core gamers. And Pokemon boasts the highest player retention rates across their whole lineup, which just fuels future downloadable content sales.
That makes perfect sense.
But the true genius, the real behavioral economics masterclass here, is in the timing of this bundle.
Right. Because Nintendo already announced that on September 1st, they are raising the standalone price of the Switch 2 from $450 up to $500. And they're blaming component costs for that.
Yeah, exactly.
So this $500 bundle arrives just months before the official price hike. It acts just like, well, think of a bank offering you a locked-in mortgage rate right before they publicly announce an interest rate hike.
That's a great way to look at it.
Suddenly, you know, locking yourself into a massive 30-year debt feels like you just beat the system somehow. You feel financially responsible for spending $500 today.
It is a textbook price anchoring strategy. By bundling the console and a premium game for $500 right now, consumers register this immediate savings of up to $80.
Right.
And it establishes $500 as the baseline bundle price in the public consciousness. So when September arrives and the bare console costs $500 on its own, the psychological blow is severely softened.
Because the consumer remembers, oh yeah, $500 is just a normal amount to spend on this hardware, even though the value proposition has totally changed.
Exactly. Plus, let's be real. They have warehouses to clear out. Rumors are pointing really heavily to a Switch 2 Pro launching in the fourth quarter for $600.
Yeah, they have to get rid of the old stock.
Right. They need to liquidate the current Switch 2 inventory now to avoid massive price erosion when the Pro model hits. And we also have to factor in the traditional summer slump.
Where console sales drop, what, like 25 to 35%?
Yeah, about 25 to 35%. And Sony is aggressively bundling the PlayStation 5 Pro right now, while Microsoft is tossing in Game Pass Ultimate with the Xbox Series X Elite.
So Nintendo is engineering an artificial sense of urgency to pull those third quarter sales forward into the second quarter.
Exactly, completely controlling the spending narrative.
Okay, so hardware is where they compete for your initial dollars. But the software ecosystem is where they lock you in indefinitely.
That's where the real money is.
Yeah. And this is where the control mechanisms get much more pervasive.
Yeah.
And not surprisingly, where the pushback from users is getting incredibly fierce. So let's look at this grassroots rebellion happening right now against Microsoft. It's called Tiny 11.
Oh, Tiny 11. Yes.
This is a community modification. It was created by a developer known as NTDEV, and it recently crossed 5 million downloads.
Which is massive for a community mod.
It is. And as Windows 10 approaches its end of support in October 2025, millions of people are discovering that their perfectly good computers are blocked from installing Windows 11. So Tiny 11 basically strips Windows 11 of all its bloatware.
Right. It takes out Microsoft Edge, Teams, OneDrive, Copilot, the widgets, all of it.
Yeah, all the heavy stuff, and it forces it to run on older hardware.
And the contrast in the technical requirements exposes just how much overhead Microsoft's ecosystem really demands. Like, a standard Windows 11 installation requires over 20 gigabytes of storage and 4 gigabytes of RAM.
Just to run the base operating system.
Yeah, exactly. But Tiny 11? It slashes the installation size to just 6 gigabytes and requires only 2 gigabytes of RAM.
That is wild.
Boot times drop from 30 to 45 seconds down to just 15 to 20 seconds. But crucially, it completely bypasses Microsoft's mandatory hardware requirements, specifically TPM 2.0 and Secure Boot.
Okay, so I need to push back on that specific point right there.
Yeah.
Because bypassing security protocol sounds incredibly dangerous.
It definitely raises red flags.
Right, because if we take a step back, TPM 2.0 and Secure Boot act like kind of like VIP bouncers at the door of a nightclub.
Sure.
Before the operating system is even allowed to wake up and start running, these hardware chips check the ID of the software. They make sure no malicious code is slipped in while the computer was off.
Yep, that's their job.
So if a user bypasses those bouncers and installs a modded operating system from some random developer on the internet, aren't they just trading corporate bloatware for a hacked bank account?
I mean, it is the most critical question any user should ask before modifying their OS. Absolutely. But the reason Tiny 11 has bypassed the usual security alarms in the tech community is its transparency.
Okay, how so?
The build code used to strip down the operating system is entirely open source. It's publicly audited on GitHub.
Oh, okay. So people can see exactly what it's doing.
Thousands of independent security researchers have dissected the script. They've verified that it contains no malware, no backdoors. It utilizes the official Windows installation media and simply runs a surgical removal of those secondary applications.
but Microsoft obviously provides zero customer support if your Tiny 11 installation just crashes, right?
Oh, zero. You are completely on your own.
But 5 million people are deciding that running an unsupported, stripped-down operating system is preferable to throwing their laptops in a landfill or, you know, handing over their system resources to Microsoft's aggressive monetization tools.
And it's actually making waves. Internal sources indicate this massive flight risk is forcing Microsoft to actively consider developing an official Windows 11 Lite.
Really? Which proves the point that organized, grassroots refusal can actually bend the strategy of a trillion-dollar company.
Yeah. It absolutely can.
So users are hacking your operating systems to escape Microsoft's grip. But Apple is facing a boss-level threat to its ecosystem, and you can't bypass this one with a GitHub script. The U.S. Department of Justice is suing Apple.
The big antitrust case, yes.
Yeah, they're claiming Apple operates an illegal monopoly that stifles innovation and unfairly traps both consumers and developers.
And Apple's legal strategy in response to the suit is just one of the most fascinating maneuvers in recent history.
It really is bold.
Because their core defense has always been that their closed ecosystem is a feature, not a bug, right? They argue they are a monopoly. They simply offer a highly curated, secure environment that prioritizes user privacy.
Right.
But to legally substantiate that claim, Apple actually filed a discovery demand in federal court for documents from 14 different federal agencies. You're talking the Department of Defense, the NSA, the FBI.
The audacity of that argument is brilliant. Apple is essentially putting the government on trial here. They're asking, if our ecosystem is as anti-competitive and illegally restrictive as the DOJ claims, then why do your military and intelligence agencies explicitly mandate the use of iPhones for national security operations?
Exactly.
It reminds me of a city health inspector trying to shut down a local restaurant for endless health code violations. And the restaurant owner's defense is demanding the records showing that the health inspector's office just booked their own staff holiday party at that exact restaurant.
That is the perfect analogy.
You can't call the food toxic if it's the only thing you're willing to eat.
Yeah, that analogy captures the hypocrisy Apple is trying to expose perfectly. They are demanding the government's own internal procurement decisions and security assessments
to use against them in court.
Right. Apple wants to put those documents in front of a judge to prove their market dominance is a strict meritocracy, that it's based on superior security architecture, not monopolistic bullying.
Because how can the federal government prosecute Apple for its platform restrictions while simultaneously relying on those exact same restrictions to protect state secrets?
Exactly. Now, the DOJ is fighting tooth and nail to block these discovery requests. They argue national security procurement has absolutely nothing to do with consumer antitrust law.
That's fair enough.
But Apple actually forced Samsung to hand over similar internal documents in a South Korean court to prove competitors utilize the same platform restrictions.
Wow, they have a precedent for this kind of aggressive move.
They do. Apple is using the government's own behavior as a shield. They are leaning heavily into this narrative of, we are the only ones standing between your private data and an internet full of bad actors.
Which, when you look at the broader landscape of data exploitation right now, Apple's narrative gains a lot of traction. The sheer scale of predatory behavior in the advertising tech space makes a locked-down ecosystem look incredibly appealing.
It really does.
Which transitions us perfectly to this next story. The FTC just dropped a massive $930,000 fine on three companies, Cox Media, Mindshift, and 1010 Digital Works.
And Cox Media took the brunt of it, right?
Yeah, an $880,000 penalty just for them. And the grift these companies were running is just, it's the ultimate modern tech paranoia brought to life.
It's what everyone has always feared.
Seriously?
Yeah.
So they pitched advertisers a service they called Active Listening, and they claimed they possessed an AI system capable of secretly tapping into the microphones on consumers' smartphones and smart speakers.
Just listening in on private conversations in living rooms.
Exactly. Analyzing spoken conversations and deploying highly targeted ads based on that audio data.
I mean, it validates that universal modern experience, you know, where you mention wanting a new espresso machine to your spouse, and literally an hour later, an ad for an espresso machine appears on your social feed.
Everyone has a story like that.
Right. And these firms explicitly told advertisers, yes, we are the ones listening. We can do this. But the revelation from the FTC investigation is far more fascinating than the pitch itself.
Yeah, what do they actually find?
The active listening AI did not exist.
Wait, it was completely fake.
It was a complete fabrication. They weren't hacking microphones at all. Apple and Google's operating systems actually do restrict unauthorized microphone access.
Okay, so then what were they actually doing?
What these companies were really doing was just buying cheap, standard demographic lists from data brokers. They slapped a terrifying active listening AI label on them and then resold them to gullible advertisers at a massive markup.
Unbelievable. But it forces us to confront a much deeper, honestly more unsettling reality about modern algorithms.
Which is?
The reason the scam worked. The reason advertisers bought the snake oil and consumers genuinely believe their microphones were tapped is because predictive data modeling is already that good.
Oh, yeah, that's the scary part.
Data brokers don't need to record your audio. By analyzing your location data, your search history, your scroll speed, purchasing patterns, they already know you're going to buy that espresso machine before you even speak the words out loud.
It's eerie. The algorithms are so precise, they create the illusion of wiretapping.
Yeah, so these companies just use the buzzword AI to dress up a classic data broker grift. They exploited both public paranoia and corporate greed. And this unchecked weaponization of technology, using algorithms to manipulate human behavior without any oversight, is exactly why the most unexpected voice just entered the global tech regulation chat.
The Pope.
The Pope.
Yeah.
On May 25th, 2026, Pope Leo IV released a 150-page encyclical titled Magnifica Humanitas, or The Magnificence of Humanity.
And honestly, it is arguably the most comprehensive, technically literate statement on artificial intelligence ethics ever produced by a religious institution.
I was shocked reading it.
Right. What makes it powerful is that it doesn't just rely on vague spiritual platitudes. It directly diagnoses the structural and economic flaws of the tech industry. It specifically names OpenAI, Google, Meta, Anthropic, and Microsoft.
Yeah. He is not holding back. He breaks down the threat of AI into five core warnings. And he doesn't just list what the problems are. He dives deep into the mechanics of why they are fundamentally destructive to society.
Yeah, let's walk through those because they're profound.
Well, for example, he points to the destruction of meaningful work. The tech industry always frames the automation of cognitive and creative labor as this massive leap in efficiency.
Right, we're freeing humans from drudgery.
Exactly. But the Pope argues this is a profound theological issue. Work is not merely an economic transaction. It is tied to human dignity and purpose. If we automate human contribution out of existence, we aren't creating a utopia of leisure. We are stripping away the structural foundation of human meaning.
And he applies that same structural critique to his next point, the concentration of power. The encyclical argues that when a small, unelected elite in Silicon Valley controls the algorithms that dictate global information flow, we are basically witnessing the birth of a new form of totalitarianism.
That is a strong word to use.
Very strong. It's not enforced by military might, but by invisible algorithmic manipulation that decides what populations see, feel, and believe on a daily basis.
Which ties directly into his warning about the atrophy of critical thinking.
Oh, this one is huge.
Yeah, because if humans constantly outsource their judgment, their moral calculations, and their daily decision-making to AI systems, we devolve. We go from active moral agents into passive consumers of pre-digested conclusions. We lose the muscular ability to think for ourselves.
And the remaining two points are equally severe. He addresses the erosion of human relationships, warning that mediating all authentic connection through algorithms destroys empathy.
Which we're already seeing with social media.
Exactly. And finally, the acceleration of warfare. He states unequivocally that autonomous weapon systems machines that are authorized to make life and death decisions without a human pulling the trigger cross a moral red line that fundamentally violates human dignity.
And the tech industry's reaction to this document was immediate and incredibly defensive. Sam Altman from OpenAI and Sundar Pichai from Google released statements that essentially amounted to, "We respect the Pope's spiritual guidance, but AI is humanity's greatest gift."
Right. It was a very polite PR-approved dismissal.
Yeah. But behind closed doors, the industry has to be sweating.
Oh, they are terrified because this encyclical aligns perfectly with the strict regulatory frameworks currently being debated by the EU AI Act and the United Nations. The Pope commands the attention of 1.4 billion Catholics worldwide.
That is a massive voting.
Massive. This document will heavily influence domestic policy in Catholic-majority nations across Europe and Latin America. The tech sector has spent a decade brushing off AI ethics concerns as fringe academic activism.
Yeah, just a bunch of worried professors.
Right. But they cannot easily brush off a coordinated moral, political, and regulatory stance backed by one of the largest global institutions on Earth.
The walls are rapidly closing in on the Wild West era of the internet. When we stack all of these sources together today, from a $399 pair of headphones to a 150-page papal document, we are looking at a fundamental shift in momentum.
Yeah, if we synthesize these seemingly unrelated events, the undeniable through line here is accountability.
Right.
The era of move fast and break things with zero oversight is facing a terminal decline. I mean, consumers are voting with their wallets for Sennheiser's repairable hardware, rejecting the trap of planned obsolescence.
And 5 million everyday users are technically reclaiming their computers with Tiny 11, proving that bloatware is a liability, not a feature.
Exactly. The federal government is forcing Apple to legally justify the walls around its ecosystem, and global institutions are demanding that AI billionaires answer for the societal architecture they are building. The illusion that tech companies can operate entirely outside the bounds of societal control is shattering.
It really is.
Yeah.
So we started today talking about the steering wheel and the feeling of losing control over the machines we rely on. But looking at the sheer scale of the pushback happening right now across all these sectors, I want to leave you with a question to chew on as you go about your day.
It's a good one.
As corporations are increasingly forced by the FTC, the DOJ, the EU, and even the Vatican to become transparent and accountable, will the next great technological leap be driven by what these algorithms can do? Or will it be driven by what you and I actively refuse to accept? It makes you look at the device in your hand a little differently, doesn't it? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the forces shaping our future. Keep questioning the tech in your own pockets, and we will see you next time.